It's time for Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. Talk of the Town, brought to you by Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. Dakota Pharmacy and Dakota Natural Health Center. We're here to help you stay well. Trademark Realty, Peak Automotive and Service, and Silver Ranch.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm Steve Michael, along with Jason Spies. You can catch Jason on the Crude Life Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. Coming up this morning, we've got Roger Johnson with Badlands Tank Line. Talk about some work up in North Dakota, the Bakken, Wyoming, Colorado, down in Texas, and some of the other places, and what they see in different shale plays. Also, we're going to talk with Jason a little bit about some comments Bill Gates made earlier this week. We'll get into that as well. Also, he was doing some homework on the roots of Best of America PAC and explained that to us as well. Also, we've got an update with PHMSA and the proposed Summit Carbon Solutions CO2 pipeline. We'll find out about that as well. And coming up at 10 o'clock, we'll talk with Dennis Lindahl and Sarah Stogner, candidate for the Railroad Commission down in Texas, with our public-private picks. So we'll see. But she pointed out a good one last week, didn't she, Jason?
She picked one of the biggest upsets of the week, the one that people are still talking about. And Steve, if Randy's got time or you got time, let's grab that sound bite, because I want to play it back for Sarah, because she had to be the only person in the state of Texas who picked the Arizona Cardinals to beat the Dallas Cowboys. And she is running for Texas Railroad Commissioner, Steve. Do you understand the guts and the, let's use the Vince McMahon terms, the coconuts that it takes to do that?
Well, now here's the thing, though, and I want to point this out for our listeners down in Texas. So, yes, she may have picked against the Dallas Cowboys, which probably endeared herself to a lot of Houston Texans fans. However, it shows, as a potential politician, she's honest.
She's not afraid to go against
the
grain.
She's not afraid to
look at the information that's presented to her and say, you know what? I need to do what's best for my constituents and my state. And so I can't just be a lemming. I have to pick the Arizona Cardinals. I wonder if she'll look at it as hippy dippy as we are right now. Can we deep dive on this anymore?
We'll save that for when Sarah's here to defend herself. So joining us on the program right now, Roger Johnson, Badlands Tank Line. Roger, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, good morning, guys.
So give us a little background for our listeners. What's your footprint as far as what you guys get into in the oil patches and your footprint in North Dakota as well as other places?
You bet. So Badlands is pretty much a pure play crude oil hauler. We do some high pressure vessel work as well, butane, propane, Y-grade, et cetera. But, you know, our roots are absolutely in crude hauling. We believe that today we are the largest crude hauler in the U.S. That is, at least for higher crude hauler, I should say. We average about 145 to 150,000 barrels a day on truck right now.
That's absolutely incredible. And what a story. So let's talk about that a little bit. What's the genesis behind this? You are the reason, folks, that we have Mr. Roger Johnson on, as they just acquired some Marathon assets in the Bakken, and we'll talk about your Bakken specific, but give us a little bit of a genesis. You know, how many employees, were you, you know, a one truck operation? Did you inherit it from, you know, your grandfather? Talk to us about Badlands Tank Line.
So the funny thing is, so I started my career working for Flying J prior to them being purchased by Pilot. I was an accountant in the trucking group. So I kind of understood trucking from kind of the accounting side of the business. And
which is the most important side, by the way.
you have to know how to count the beans, right?
I used to work for a trucking company, so I get it. Yep. Okay.
Yep. Long story short, when you know, I ended up moving into sales, and then when Pilot bought Flying J, I took a job offer as an ethanol trader in Omaha, Nebraska. And that's what brought us to Omaha. And, that was April of 2010 when I started that job. And, you know, crude by rail was really starting to ramp up. It was sort of the talk of the town. You know, Harold Hamm was on Sean Hannity talking about it. The whole world was interested. And the company I worked for had a whole bunch of rail cars. And the we were short rail cars at the time. So all these crude traders were coming to us saying, hey, can we lease rail cars or do different things? And the boss of the company, we're sitting in a meeting, and he said, hey, we got to figure this crude by rail thing out. He said, we've got a balance sheet. We've got rail cars. Why don't we do this ourselves? And, you know, the company I worked for, being, you know, an ethanol producer, they were primarily ag-based. So everybody there was a corn or soybean trader. And I was probably the only guy in the company that could spell oil. So they said, hey, Roger, this is your baby. Go get it. And all of a sudden, I wasn't an ethanol trader. I became a crude oil trader and had to kind of learn it, and was buying crude oil in the Bakken. So I was shipping them out of rail facilities and buying it at the leats from producers and, you know, the Whitings and the Continentals of the world, and kind of got going that way. At the time, the carriers that I was dealing with were just abysmal. Like they just didn't care. They were so busy. There was so much demand that if I pushed back on rate or service, or, you know, if I had an ask that was outside of what they wanted to give, like they just said, sorry, buddy, you're my 10th phone call today. Like if you don't like what I'm giving you, just, you know, go call somebody else. Right. Like they really didn't care. And I just thought, man, what's going on here? And having a little bit of a financial background in the trucking space, I started just crunching numbers and said, you know, how much are these guys making, you know, per truck, per driver, et cetera? You know, because after a few months of this, I had some history. I knew what they were invoicing me for. And so I was able to track, you know, revenue per truck, revenue per driver. And I built the model. I just looked at that and thought, holy smokes. Like these guys have terrible service, terrible operations. Everything about what they do is substandard, and they're charging sky high rates. I said, there's got to be an opportunity here. And I'd always sort of had an entrepreneurial bend to me. And I went home and I showed my wife this, and I said, I need to start a trucking company. And at the time, you know, this is, you know, late 2010 by this point in time. And I had no business doing this, like zero. You know, our kids at the time were 4, 2, and 6 months old. And, you know, neither one of us came from any kind of money. Like we were just starting to make our way in the world. Right. And it was a huge risk. And, you know, I started kind of putting it together, and having had that trucking background is very helpful. I started calling around to some of the truck drivers that I knew from my previous career and said, hey, you know, if I did something, would you be willing, interested in coming up and working with me? And a friend of mine who was at the time managing a water hauling business on the West Slope of Colorado was interested. His company just got purchased by a private equity firm, and they wanted to change everything about that operation. He wasn't happy with it. So he decided he would come on board, and he brought sort of his right-hand guy with him. And again, going back to, you know, I didn't have any money. So what I did at the time, there was a carrier up there called Taylor. It later became Gibson, and is now Gibson actually has exited the business entirely in the U.S. I leased onto them as an owner operator because I didn't know what I didn't know on the ground, right? I knew conceptually from a business perspective how to run the business. I didn't know anything about, you know, actually doing a grind out, you know, how to load a truck, unload a truck, any of that stuff. And so, and I didn't have the capital to go buy a truck. I didn't have any money. So I borrowed enough from a couple of investors here in Omaha, just guys that I just pitched a dream to. And they're like, yeah, we'll take a shot on this kid.
Roger, we're up against a break. Hold on. That fascinating story. And by the way, you didn't just walk down the block and go visit with Warren Buffett, right, being in Omaha?
No.
No, that didn't work out that way? Okay.
Well, you know, we golf about once a month or so. But
yeah, you might get a little territorial on the rail side. So we're talking with Roger Johnson, CEO of Badlands Tank Line. Now, when we come back, myself and Jason Spees, this is a Wattage Wednesday on Super Talk 1270.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm Steve Bach along with Jason Spees from The Crude Life. You can catch The Crude Life Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. We're talking with Roger Johnson, CEO of Badlands Tank Line. And Roger, I want to come back to where you're at in that story. I mean, you talk about entrepreneurship and rolling up your sleeves and starting a business from scratch and putting the pieces together. And, you know, you mentioned young kids, and you had to have some pretty good support from your wife on that, or that just doesn't work.
You know, she was absolutely incredible. And had I not had, if she had not had the faith in me that she did, I don't think most wives would have put up with what my wife did. I mean, we were in that beans and rice stage for a good 3-4 years, right? When, you know, I had had a good 6-figure job as a trader, right? Where it was like, oh, we're finally starting to kind of come out of this. You know, and this is, my wife is somebody who, as a child, she was homeless for a couple of years, literally lived in a tent for a while as a kid. And so for her, home security is a big deal. And, you know, to take that risk on me to say, hey, I believe in you, I think you can do this, is a huge step. And then there's no way I could have done it without that.
Absolutely fascinating. So you sign on as an owner-operator, kind of learned the meat and potato side, the working side of the business. Where did you go from there?
So, yeah, the thing I learned as an owner-operator was growth was really hard. I was always cash poor. Every time I'd add a truck, it increased the working capital, right? You get drivers and maintenance and fuel. And, you know, you're doing all of the hard stuff sometimes. But I was able to understand how to set up payroll, how the drivers needed to be treated, right? Kind of more of the bigger picture of the Bakken, you know, who's doing what, where. And then I got an in with my first customer at the time, who was a very large crude by rail shipper. And I got my own authority. This would have been October of 2012. And they said, hey, we'll give you 4 loads a day. And so I actually had one truck that was my own truck, was not one of the lease trucks that I had bought. Just, it was sitting on a lot in Minot for whatever reason. And we bought it, and that was my first truck. And so I started running that truck. And that's how we did that work initially. And then as soon as the company I was leased to got wind of what was going on, they terminated our contract and I was all in, right? So, and we did a really good job that first month. It was kind of a kick in the gut to kind of step back from, because I built up to be their largest owner operator in the Bakken. I think we had 12 drivers or something working for us. And all of a sudden I didn't have enough equipment of my own to take 12 drivers and put them to work on my own work. And I had to scramble a little bit, but that's how it goes, right? I mean, if you've survived in the oil field, you've learned to scramble, because you can never count on anything from day to day in this business.
I always tell people it's like changing your oil while driving 90 miles an hour down the interstate, because you got to make these decisions in real time. And, you know, you've got a fascinating story because you sound very much like an old school entrepreneur. And in fact, in the next hour, we're going to have Dennis Lindstrom on from Economic Development to kind of defend economic development, because I went off last week about just some of the picking and choosing that government is doing. And I don't want to get into a political discussion with you. That's not why we're here. But I did want to point out that you sound very much like an old school entrepreneur, all the way to private equity. When did you find your springboard? Did you start in the Bakken? Did you start in the Permian? When did you find that springboard?
So it was absolutely the Bakken. And, you know, at the time, I mean, that's when, you know, MBI was going strong there. They had hundreds of drivers going on. You know, there were several dozen competitors in the space. And I remember a couple of the crude traders that I knew up there were like, what are you doing? Like, you should just stick with we don't need any more carriers. Just keep doing what you're doing, right? In your job, and you'll do just fine. And it was just eating at me. Like, my gut just would not let me settle, right? I just knew there was a better way to do this. And today we're very clearly the biggest carrier in the Bakken and in the U.S. for that matter. So it's, like I said, for hire carrier. I'm pretty sure that a Plains or an Enterprise has more drivers or hauls more oil than we do, but it's their own stuff. It's not for hire.
We're talking with Roger Johnson, CEO of Badlands Tank Line. Myself and Jason Spies from The Crude Life, Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. We're up against a break again, but when we come back, I want to talk a little bit, because Jason mentioned, because he did go off last week on economic development, and I want to talk a little bit about the landscape when you started up versus the landscape now, because I'm sure you're quite familiar with what's going on, and it seems like we're in a cycle of free money. We're going to pass out money like candy. That's not what you started in. That's not how you built this business. This is Talk of the Town on Supertalk 1270. I'm Steve Bakken, along with Jason Spies from The Crude Life, on a Wattage Wednesday. This is Talk of the Town on Supertalk 1270.
Talk of the Town, Super Talk 1270. Listen to the games anywhere with the free Super Talk 1270 app. Download today in the App Store or Google Play.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.
Talk of the Town, brought to you by Big Boy. Just get in line. It moves fast. Dakota Pharmacy and Dakota Natural Health Center. We're here to help you stay well. Trademark Realty, Peak Automotive and Service, and Silver Ranch. Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm Steve Bakken, along with Jason Spies from The Crude Life. You can get your Crude Life Sunday mornings, 10 a.m. right here on Super Talk 1270. We're talking with Roger Johnson, CEO of Badlands Tank Line, and a fascinating story of where he came from. And yeah, you know, Jason, you mentioned the economic development stuff, because you beat up on that pretty hard last week. And we're going to talk to Dennis Lindahl coming up after 10 o'clock, Economic Development Director.
Steve, what was our teachable moment last week? It was not, you know, we're not picking on, we're not beating up.
Okay.
We are having observations. observation, and we are having experiences, and we are having a natural reaction. Okay, go on.
Thank you for that correction. You're 100% correct, but we're going to get the other side of that and what that means to small communities with Dennis Lindahl, Economic Development Director up in Tioga, coming up in just a few minutes. But we're talking with Roger Johnson. Roger, I want to come back to that piece just a little bit before we go in a different direction. Where you started and rolling your sleeves up, being an owner-operator, getting the, because you had a vision, you had a dream, you had a goal in mind, and you saw the pathway and you went down that road. Where we are today, it seems like there's a lot of free-flowing money out there, but there's a detrimental side to that, and that's the economic development side. We see that in North Dakota a lot, money run through commerce that is funneled out of the legacy fund via the governor. He's turned it into his own personal hedge fund for projects. They're just throwing money at stuff and seeing what it'll stick. From a business perspective, I don't see that as the best route, because you're not teaching the private sector to innovate and stand on their own two feet. I have this rule when it comes to energy, 5 years. You know, there should be no subsidies or mandates after 5 years, because you're taking away the ability for the private sector to innovate and find the pathway to make it financially viable or technically viable. And when you're subsidizing things, that doesn't happen. Where you come from, you didn't see this. This was a different landscape. Where would you see yourself today if you were just starting out versus back when you started out and having to put the time and the effort in personally? Roll your sleeves up and get to work. Do you see a difference in the landscape now? And because I think you're better off now than if you were just starting up today and were given all that free money, because would that company be around for the long term? That's the question I always have.
Sure. So the easy answer is absolutely not. Like, we would not be the same company today. There's a few things. Back in the day when things were just insane up in the Bakken, you could get away with a lot more mistakes at the time. There were lower tolerances in the field with your customers as far as spills and whatnot. And because we were all just learning, like, everybody out there was doing the same thing, right? And at the time, you know, the rates were a lot higher. You could pay your drivers a lot more. And so once you figured out, well, you had to pay your drivers a lot more, quite frankly, to get them up there. But in that process, you figure out exactly what needs to be done and how it's that incremental improvement, right? And then you get a wipeout or extinction level event, like what happened circa 2015, 2016 up there, and then again in 2020. And it really forces you to just double down and get disciplined. And if you have easy money, you never learn those skills, right? It's like the, you know, the old feeding the bears in Yellowstone story, right? I mean, if all you, if you're living on the landfill, well, that's pretty easy. But as soon as you have to go kick over a bunch of stumps and logs looking for grubs, right, you're probably going to starve to death. And so once that gravy train ends, you're going to be in trouble, because business is hard. Every single business. And I think from the outside observer, it doesn't appear that way, right? And business has gotten so good at what they do, right? When people go to the gas pump, they put gas in their car and it just works. When they flip on the light switch, there's electricity. It just works, right? You go to the grocery store and you find stuff on the shelves. It's there, right? But the average consumer doesn't understand how much work goes into making all of those things happen day to day.
Well, and that's part of the problem, is that average consumer thinks now, and this is generational, and we've gotten down this road, that electricity does come from that light switch. It doesn't come from somewhere else. Or the food comes from the grocery store. It doesn't come from somewhere else. There's a process to get there, and it's laborious. And people aren't understanding that farm to market or farm to table or energy to the switch or gas to the pump, there is such a much larger world out there, and there's a disconnect in society that is detrimental as well.
Absolutely, right? There's people that work for me who are, you know, a generation older than I am, and they're guys that, if they didn't know how to fix stuff, they walked everywhere they went, right?
Yeah.
Like they were tearing down engines, you know, in the driveway in the 1970s, right? And like that's a skill that I never learned. Part of it was, so I actually grew up in Southern California, believe it or not. It wasn't my fault, but that's where I was born and raised. I got out as soon as I could. But I didn't, you know, there it was a much more compact, dense community. So, you know, I could ride my bike pretty much everywhere I wanted to go and whatnot. But there's so many people that are in their, I would say, 50s, 60s, 70s that are just handy as can be and just know how to work. And it's something you really don't see much in people who are, say, in their 20s. And I'm not saying it's their fault. That's just the nature of technology has just made things so much different and so much easier.
I'd like to jump in here for a second. Steve and I do this thing where every now and then when we'd like to pause for a teachable moment, we'll, you know, push the red button with the sirens or have a monkey come in with seltzer to spray us all to stop what we're doing.
Usually it's the monkey, but
yeah, you're bringing up a very good point here, because another thing that we try to talk about is the intangible versus the tangible marketplace. And right now, you know, 80% of the workers in the United States are what's called thought workers. Thought workers would be a realtor, a lawyer, anybody who has a desk job, anybody in marketing, accountants. These are all thought workers, okay? And then you've got, of course, the tangible side. You have both with Badlands Tank Lines. So you've got the actual tangible trucking, tanks, the whole type of, you know, like we always say, the tires. You know, when you go to the tire store, you can touch and feel the tire. But what you don't touch and feel is all of the engineering and marketing and human resources that go into that tire behind the scenes. So what we've been arguing is that one of the areas where the government, especially in North Dakota, they're picking winners and losers in the thought market. So if you had a brand new business plan that was an innovative logistical way for trucking, that would be considered an intangible thing. What we've found out in the state, and I've been on the receiving end and know others, the state has actually reached out to us to get our intangible business plans through meetings where they ask questions, and then all of a sudden they'll just ghost type of a thing. So my question to you is that if your competition all of a sudden got $600,000 to go buy new equipment, would that impact you on the tangible side? And the other question is that if your competition got $600,000 in government money to go and do something intangible, like upgrade the electrical and do marketing and that sort of thing, would that impact your business in any way?
Well, it absolutely does, right? Capital is the blood of business. And whether that capital comes from a return on invested capital or free cash flow that your business generates, or it's financed capital from, you know, say bank debt or, you know, equity investment, or it's a grant from the government, right? Capital is the lifeblood of business. And if your customers or your competitors, excuse me, you know, are able to access capital less expensively than you can and in greater proportion than you can, they have a leg up. I'm not going to say they're always going to win, because what you do with that capital really matters, and how you handle it and your internal business processes really matter. And those are the things that you know, I've never done any of these like grant applications and whatnot, like you guys are talking about, but those are the things that, you know, some grantor cannot pick up from an application. You can say, oh, I'm going to use this to go buy X amount of equipment and I'm going to hire 8 new people. And then the government will say, oh, look, see, we're stimulating the economy. We're going to have this much more you know, GDP added to the state, and we're going to hire, you know, have eight new jobs, right? But if you don't have the discipline in your organization behind the scenes to do it, absent of that, then you're not going to succeed in the long run. It's not going to happen. So, and that doesn't mean that businesses can't develop that, but we have seen it time and time and time again, mm-hmm. how, you know, the government props up industries or companies and they just fail. It's because they don't have that discipline internally. They've got other issues. And money can't solve some issues. It really can't. As much as the government wants to think that money is everything, it's not.
One of the issues we saw in the print industry was that when the government was propping up Facebook and Yahoo and Google and other social media sites and search engine sites, the newspapers were getting just eradicated. And the proof is newspapers had a 100-year monopoly. And when the internet came and the government started propping up the internet, newspapers started going bankrupt. They had a 100-year monopoly and they went bankrupt in less than 5 to 10 years. That is a paradigm shift that is undisputed. Okay. So when that happened, I kind of see that happening right now too, to where it's a slow bleed on the vine. And at the same time, you have to change your oil while driving 90 miles down the interstate. And I saw them do that to the trucking industry during COVID, because if you're in the trucking industry and you didn't have payroll, good luck, man. You were trying to figure out how to change your oil while going 200 miles down the industry, down the interstate. You know what I mean? But Steve, yep. I know we're up against the break here, so I'll hand off the baton so you can do your thing, sir.
Tell you what, Roger, if fascinating story this morning. If you got the time, we'd like to carry over to the last segment this hour and just talk a little bit about the footprint with Badlands, if you've got the time this morning.
You bet.
All right, we're talking with Roger Johnson, CEO of Badlands Tank Line, and Jason Spees, of course, the Crude Life. You can catch the Crude Life Sunday mornings, 10 a.m., right here on Super Talk 1270.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.
Welcome back to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
You're tuned to Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. I'm Steve Bogan along with Jason Spees from The Crude Life. We're talking with Roger Johnson, CEO of Badlands Tank Line. And Roger, I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your footprint, because you talked about the auspicious beginnings and no, not walking down the street to Warren Buffett's house and getting an influx of cash in Omaha, but coming up to North Dakota and rolling up your sleeves and learning the other side of the business. You knew the business side of the business, but learning the actual out in the field working side of business. And you've been pretty successful with that, with that beginning here in North Dakota. And you've expanded into other shale plays, many other states. Talk a little bit about the footprint of Badlands Tank Line.
Sure. So today, Badlands is about 500 employees. We're working on another acquisition here that will close in a couple weeks that would add another 150 or so. So we are active in the Bakken, the Powder River Basin in Wyoming, the DJ Basin in Colorado, the Uinta Basin in Utah, the Permian in Texas and New Mexico, then the Eagle Ford in South Texas, and over in the Utica in Ohio. So, and we're, you know, crude haulers for almost everybody out there at this point in time.
Now, so. My understanding is you just acquired some Marathon assets, and so give you an opportunity to speak on that. North Dakota also has a workforce shortage issue. Are you guys hiring? Do you guys have your needs met there as a follow-up question?
Sure. So number one, we are always hiring. Drivers, we pay very well, right? Our wages, you know, are average driver probably call it $130,000 a year, roughly to $150,000 a year, depending on the driver and where they work and how much they want to work and whatnot. But you're always hiring. It's a constant treadmill. And one of the things that's been very good for us is we hired a couple of recruiters who had some very extensive experience in over the road trucking and brought a different level of professionalism to our recruiting group. And it's been just a game changer for us. And that team over there does a very good job.
Roger, one of the things that we used to see back when you started up, and this was the norm back in 2010, 11, 12, from a workforce perspective, people would walk across the street for a quarter. They're going to pay me a quarter more. I'm going over there. What are you seeing now in the different shale plays, in the different landscape? Because North Dakota is not unique to that workforce shortage. We're seeing that across the country because coming out of COVID, some people just don't want to work. They don't want to go back to getting their hands dirty. They want to work from home. They want a different paradigm shift when it comes to the workplace. What are you seeing out there, and how does that play into your recruiting?
So there's definitely a segment of the population still that feels like it is their duty to work for their money, right? And they earn it, and they're hardworking, and they're honest, and they just, you know, put one foot in front of the other every day. And so in that sense, we still have a very robust pool of workers to come from. And, you know, they will tend to change, like you said, for a quarter. The thing that about particularly truck drivers, because that's where I have the most experience, I can't speak to rig hands or frat crews or any of those other things in the oil field. But drivers have all worked at a number of places. And unfortunately, many trucking companies sometimes aren't very good at what they do, and they've made mistakes in payroll, or they've, you know, been late with a paycheck, or they've sometimes even been dishonest, right? So that's one of the things that, you know, many, many drivers are keenly aware of what's going on with their paycheck. They've learned to look at it every day to make sure they're getting paid for every load at the agreed upon rate. And so that's one of the things that we have from very early on at Badlands. I would go through, I mean, at one point in time, I mean, I did all of the invoicing, all of the accounts payable, all of the payroll, right? I did all of it, and I was checking every paycheck every 2 weeks, making sure that everything was accurate.
Well, you need that diligence, because I ran my dad's container company and trucking company, his logistics company out in Portland, Oregon for several years. You took care of the drivers. You took care of your employees first. They got paid before you did. And that's how you build a business and a successful business. We got about 20 seconds. If somebody wants to get a hold of Badlands Tank Line, find out more about working for you guys or more information about the company, where do they go?
Sure. So our website is www.badlands.com. Quite easy. And you can go on there and look for, you know, there's job applications, there's contact information. You can kind of see our footprint and what we're all about. So, and, you know, we're growing. We're actively recruiting every day.
Thank you, Roger. Roger Johnson, CEO, Badlands Tank Line. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.
KLXX AM, Mandan Bismarck, a Town Square Media station, broadcasting from the View Community Credit Union Studio.
The Crude Life would like to welcome and invite each and every one of you to the Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, Nevada, February 7th and 8th, 2024. Oil, gas, wind, solar, uranium, Bitcoin, sustainable solutions, and much, much more at this year's Energy Exposition happening in Las Vegas, February 7th and 8th. Folks, you don't want to miss the Crude Life Podcast Pool Party happening February 7th. It's the week before the Super Bowl, folks. The Energy Exposition, the Crude Life is all in 2024. For more information, check out energyexposition.com.